Thomason, now with Manual Therapy Forum. If you haven't noticed, if you haven't been back to the website for a while, I've changed the name. It is no longer manualtherapy.blog. It is instead Manual Therapy Forum. And there's a number of reasons for that. Manualtherapy.blog was never really a name that I really loved, but it was just something that seemed right at the time. But more of what I really would like to do with the website and hope to do in the future is more than just a blog. It's a full-blown website where people can come, clinicians can come and discuss things and look at videos or hear podcasts or, you know, all kinds of stuff that would go with a forum. So that's why we call it Manual Therapy Forum now. After some reason that came into my head, I thought, that's a great name. So as luck would have it, the website address was available and I got it. So here is our first podcast for Manual Therapy Forum that should launch out pretty soon, next few days. But I'd been kind of hesitant for whenever we were doing podcasts for manualtherapy.blog was including my own opinions or doing a podcast that is just me. As you can imagine, that'd be a little nerve-wracking. When you have a host, or not a host, but when you have guests, and you know you're getting their opinions, and you can really just bounce off and really ask questions and go in different directions based on what they say, it's a little bit easier. You're not just left out there all by yourself doing the recording. So it worked out great because I got to interview some really wonderful people and still plan on interviewing more wonderful people in the future. But for now, I wanted to do this one recording because I've gotten some different questions from emails in the past from students or younger clinicians asking my advice for certain things. And, you know, it's pretty humbling when somebody asks you for advice in any way possible, especially on a professional realm. And in the past, I'd personally emailed them back and gave them my two cents for whatever it was worth. But now I wanted to include some of the questions that was sent to me recently, and instead of emailing back personally, I thought, well, hey, you know, more than one person can benefit from this and gives me a chance to do something recording-wise that I think could be very valuable, hopefully, for someone out there. And here we go. It's just kind of my initial voyage into doing something where it's just me. So hopefully you don't get too bored with my voice and my thoughts, but if so, you can fast forward or just skip this whole podcast altogether. But either way, this is our initial voyage for Manual Therapy Forum podcast. So what we'll do now is I'll kind of list or voice out the different questions that this particular individual sent me via email, and won't use names or locations or anything like that, but I'll give you some basic information. It's a third year doctor of physical therapy student, and just wanted to ask some questions on how best to prepare for his future as a professional in this career. And for some reason, he thought I'd be a good person to ask or at least contribute to these questions. But the first question is, what do you recommend as a new graduate or soon-to-be graduate to best prepare for their career? So a number of things come to mind with that, and you know, I've kind of written out some stuff overall, but step number one to me is you got to have an idea of what goals that you have for yourself. In my particular example, I wanted to do a residency and a fellowship coming out of school. That was something that really interested me, and I, you know, those were my immediate goals once I graduated my program. Part of my desire to be a fellow in the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists really stemmed from one of my professors at MUSC, and his name is Dr. David Morissette. He was our professor for musculoskeletal components, and he was basically my first exposure to manual therapy. And you're just wowed by the skill level and the knowledge that somebody has when you're in that stage of your career. You know, yeah, I didn't have very much exposure. I didn't know a whole lot, but Dr. Morissette was an amazing teacher, one, professor, and two, he had a lot of skills. So it was really nice to see and very inspiring for myself and even some of my classmates to want to pursue that excellence. And he being a fellow himself in the American Academy really helped me to see, like, wow, okay, that is one way to attain a level of expertise that I want to get. So pretty soon after I started in my DPT program, the American Academy stopped doing what's called a challenge exam, and the only way to become a fellow after that was to go through a credentialed fellowship program. So that is eventually kind of how I made the decision that, yeah, I want to do a residency, become an orthopedic clinical specialist, and then go into a fellowship program because I want to be a fellow in the American Academy. So that would, for me, that'd be my recommendation initially. You know, first, know what your goals are. If you don't know that, it's like sitting in a boat in the middle of a lake. You have no idea where a dock is that you can get to, and you just be going off in any direction possible with no destination at hand, really. So once you have an idea of your goals, you can develop a plan on how to pursue it and get to achieve those goals. Once you figure out your goals and you have some sort of a plan in place, a framework to get there, then you got to be relentless in getting towards that. Obviously, anybody who listens to this podcast, you're more likely to be in various stages of life. So you might be a more seasoned clinician, you might be a brand new student going into school, you could just be graduating school, but it goes to say that many of us are going to be in different stages of life, and that just life will happen, and there's going to be a lot of changes that will occur. So whether that's between relationships, marriage, children, family, anything, those can change along the way to attain a goal. But even though that may change the time frame that you want to achieve that goal, it should not alter how you pursue that goal. You know, be relentless. Your time frame may have to adjust here and there. Even the direction or the way that you want to get to that goal may change a little bit. You know, maybe you can't go to the residency or fellowship site that you really wanted to. Maybe you got to go to a different part of the country. But whatever it takes, if that is a goal, then do what you have to do. For me, I remember going into, talked with my eventual residency mentor, Tim Kronk, and trying to figure out what in the world I'm going to do. You know, should I go on the other side of the country and do a residency in Oregon with this one group, or should I come down here and learn from Tim? You know, I don't know what the best thing to do is right now, but I remember telling him, if this doesn't work out, then I'll figure out something. I'll figure it out somehow, because this is something that I really want to do, and if it doesn't work out, that's okay. I'll figure it out somehow. So that'd be my first advice, is to figure out what your goals are, develop a plan, and then be relentless in that pursuit. So a couple other things that I was thinking about is continue to study. You really have to keep studying after you graduate and continue pushing yourself to learn. I mean, I really hope that anyone listening to this particular podcast, that it doesn't, this does not come out of their graduating program thinking that they have an outstanding grasp on how to be a great clinician. I really hope that nobody ever had that opinion or does have that opinion, because really when you're in an entry-level program, you get taught so many different things that it's really hard to feel confident in your ability the way that you will in the next 10 years type of thing. So because of that, I really encourage people to keep studying. There's so many different things that go into being an outstanding clinician that can be influenced by our own habits. So, you know, one thing that you can't influence, you know, other than studying, is time. It genuinely takes time to develop a certain level of knowledge and skill level that cannot be changed. So realize that, you know, to achieve a certain knowledge base or a skill level, it's going to take hard work, it's going to take effort, and you have to put in the hours and the studying. But some of it is just really going to take time, and it's difficult for me because I'm an impatient person and I want that now. You know, I don't want to wait 5 years from now. I want to do it this next year. Sometimes you can speed up the process a little bit, and there's certain ways of doing that, and, you know, we may cover some of that here today. But just keep in mind that those things do take time. I say keep studying, keep learning, because the best therapist that I know and I have met still study to this day. And that's after decades of practicing, not just, you know, a few years. You know, people are out 30, 40 years, they're still studying. They're still reviewing either literature or anatomy journals or anatomy textbooks or, you know, you name it. They're still reviewing stuff. So in my opinion, what would you study early on in your career? You know, keep it simple to begin with. Do the basics. Review your anatomy. Review your neuroscience. You know, how to perform the most basic examination process and a proper neurological screen, I think would be very valuable. It doesn't have to be bells and whistles and other things, but it should be something that is accurate, replicable, and fast once you learn how to master it. So those things will help you not get bogged down in the clinic and spend time thinking of, gosh, what was this again? What am I supposed to do next? You know, you have a system, you have a way of going about things that it almost just becomes habit or just rote, where you don't even have to think about it. You know, for that, for anatomy, I don't just mean, you know, review the mundane facts about origins and insertions or other things like that, or specific bones in the body or anything like that. You know, that should be hammered into you in your entry-level program. So you shouldn't have to keep reviewing those type of things. So it's important, but at that point, you really shouldn't have to hammer that process home. What I think would really be important to learn and have on the tip of your tongue and recall instantly are the different innervations, myotomes, key muscles, dermatomes, and even sclerotomes. Would be fun things to learn, fun things to review, and really get a grasp of as you go forward in your education. Which reminds me of a great saying that I heard recently. Specifically, it was from Gray Cook of Functional Movement Systems. And it's not his quote, but it's something that he got from actually Mark Twain. And Mark Twain was talking to a younger individual, a younger guy, and basically the quote is, "Young man, don't let your education get in the way of your schooling." Nope. I got mixed up. See, this is the problem of recording your own self in a podcast. It is, "Young man, don't let your schooling get in the way of your education." So when I say education, I don't just mean your entry-level program or even a residency or even a fellowship. I mean your education as a professional never ends. It should not ever end. So no matter how long you've been out of school, no matter what your stage is in life or how much experience you have, your education should still be occurring. So what do I mean by all those things, innervations, key muscles, myotomes, dermatomes, sclerotomes, things like that? You know, for any given muscle in the body, you should know at least the root level innervation and the peripheral innervation for that particular muscle. As an example, you have the quadriceps. You know, its root level is primarily L3. Yeah, I know it's not just L3, it's L2, L3, and L4, but primarily it's L3. And the peripheral innervation for the quadriceps is the femoral nerve. So another example, the supraspinatus root level is primarily C5. And the peripheral innervation to that is the suprascapular nerve. Knowing these basic facts can really help us tremendously in our ability to deliver a proper differential diagnosis and eventually a final diagnosis to help achieve some sort of competency within the clinic when we go to treat our patients. You know, neuroscience still fascinates me. I had an amazing neuroscience professor in our program, and I like to brag that she was recently the vice president of the APTA. And she was incredibly inspirational to me especially, but, you know, basically to our whole program, you know, classes above us, below us, even our class, because of her knowledge, her passion, and her skill level. She made me want to be a neurologic-based physical therapist. The longer I practice and achieve any amount of skill level as a clinician, the more I really appreciate how much of what I do as a manual therapist is intimately influenced by or has influence on the neurological system. You can't separate the two. Doesn't matter what you do as a manual therapist, you're inputting something into the neurological system, asking for a particular output. So many of the more aggressive manual techniques I've learned over the years are not necessarily needed if we learn how to, and I'm using air quotes here, speak to the neurological system with our hands. And I take that and I'll give credit to that to my friend and mentor, Kent Kaiser. Because I've heard him say that in a course before. And he says, we have to learn how to use our hands to speak to the neurological system and to be able to do it in such a gentle way that you're not beating something into somebody, asking for a particular result. You're giving a very fine touch input into the neurological system to achieve a certain output. And that takes a refinement of technique that I'm still learning, but is quite fascinating to me. When you see masters at their craft, and in this particular instance, manual therapy, you really see how gentle they are. They're not rough. At least, you know, in my opinion, you know, people who are a master. They're really, really, really refined in what they do. It's almost like the patient is literally putty in their hands because they're so calm. They're so relaxed, they're so confident in what they're doing that it just comes through them into the patient. And the patient just has the utmost confidence in whatever's about to happen is what's meant to happen and is going to be safe and is going to help them. So that could be another tangent that we go off on too, is learning how to be confident in front of a patient, not just with your mannerisms or your speaking or, you know, anything else, but being confident and let that come through your hands whenever you're doing anything with the patient. That could just be simple range of motion. You know, learning a different skill like taking range of motion in school and manual muscle testing, things like that. Yeah, it takes some practice, and we want to make sure that we do deliver those things effectively and efficiently. But just practicing that as a newer graduate or a newer clinician can really give you a chance to practice what you're going to do with your hands later on. Because if you got hands of stone when you're doing simple things like that, good luck trying to deliver a complex technique with the art of touch that's really vital. So, you know, that's also something that you can really dedicate some time to practicing. So, you know, wrapping up this question, I know I'm going on a while about it. Some of the things to prepare for as a person entering this profession, if we're talking about manual therapy you're choosing, whenever you do practice in or out of the clinic and have your hands on someone, be intentional about what you're feeling, about what you're touching. Really focus your attention on what your hands are perceiving and develop a sense of touch that is really just uncanny. That should be your intention. Again, kind of relate it back to some of the other people that I know and have influenced me. Those masters, you know, they can feel and palpate things that you think, there's no way they can do that. There's no way you can feel that. That's just BS. You know, you're telling me you can do this or that? No way. But the more time that I've spent in this profession and the more people like that I've encountered, yeah, they can. And I've seen some crazy stuff in the clinic in different settings where, yeah, you can't just say it's placebo or you can't just say it's this or that, power of suggestion or other things. Like, no, they made a change because even I, with my hands, can feel a difference in the tissue or feel a difference in how somebody moves when I do the same thing that they just did, and there's a difference before and after. It is really, really, really impressive when you encounter that in the clinic. And I just encourage, you know, everybody out there, whether you're in school, out of school, young or old, to continue to refine your palpation skills and let that translate into your technique as well. Because, yeah, those things take time, but if you're going to be intentional about what you're doing with the patient, that process can be sped up. It can only be sped up a certain amount, but hey, it could be sped up any amount. I'm going to do it. I'd rather do that than just sit back and wait. Like I said, I'm an impatient person. So doing some of those things can be very valuable, I think. And that'd be my advice in order to do that. So let's see. That's the first question. Let's move on to the next one. What is something you think every physical therapist should be doing? Okay, first of all, that's kind of a loaded question. If you're a newer graduate, listen to the past 15 minutes of what I was just talking about before. But really, you know, dedicate yourself to being, and these are all cliches. I'll tell you that up front. You probably heard everything that I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway because someone asked and, you know, you're listening to this, so I guess you want to hear what I'm saying. But dedicate yourself to be the best clinician that you can be for your patients. Not yourself, but for your patients. They're spending their time and their money to get help, so take that responsibility seriously. You know, keep an open mind. That's another thing. Keep an open mind because I have my bias. I have many biases, as do all of you. We all have our own biases that really influence our decisions and kind of our immediate thoughts on this or that. But if you can keep an open mind, you won't let possible things that could help your patient be limited. So anytime something like that happens, it's not us that really loses on that, but it's the patient. Because you're really narrowing the amount of things that can be delivered to that particular person to help them achieve their goals and to help improve their function. So be open. Be open to learning and developing new skills, no matter where you are in your career. Like I said, whether you're a new grad or whether you're a seasoned clinician, be open to many different things, many different possibilities. And once you as a clinician are comfortable with your ability to help your patients in a significant and positive way, challenge yourself. You know, go down different approaches or paradigms to learn something new. Don't just keep doing the same thing over and over again, because yeah, you're helping some people and you're making a significant change in their life. But you could probably learn something new to add to that and to further help their life, help their function. So for goodness sakes, keep an open mind, learn something new no matter where you are in your career, and patients will continue to get better. If you've been a clinician for a while, like I said before, keep learning. Make sure you're a member in your professional association if you're not, and take advantage of those other people's expertise, whether that's going to conferences or different, you know, journals that you get. You know, really take advantage of those kind of things. And speaking of journals, you know, read appropriate research. Continue reviewing different things and learning more about your anatomy and your neuroscience. And for goodness sakes, you know, mentor those people younger than you. I think I'll hit on that in a minute. But those are different things that I think every physical therapist or every manual therapist really should be doing. You know, and that goes for myself as well. Anything that I say here as advice, you know, I'm telling myself the same exact thing. So I hope it doesn't come across as being too preachy, but you know, that's what I think right now. Okay, next question. Is there anything you wish you did early on in your career, or anything you did not do, or anything that you did do that you feel others missed out on? When I think about that, I'd say no. I'm happy with my career and where it's gone so far. especially in the beginning, you know, having get to do a residency and a fellowship, you know, I wouldn't change that one bit. But I do feel like there should be something that most clinicians should do when they get out of school, especially if they aren't sure what direction they'd like to go, you know, what part, if we're talking about physical therapy, what particular part of physical therapy that they'd want to do, or if you're in another profession, what particular realm of that profession you'd want to go into. For me, I think anybody early on in their career or first graduating, I think that they should work in either an acute setting or an inpatient rehab setting. And I know a lot of you are probably shocked at that, or especially if you're younger and you're like, there's no way, I don't want to do that. I want to be in a private practice. I want to be an outpatient. I don't want to do that kind of stuff. I would say, hang on just a second, you know, hear me out. When I first got out of school, I worked for a rehab hospital's outpatient department. So some of this is a little hypocritical, but I'll say that, you know, I wasn't specialized in anything, obviously. I was straight out of school. But I did get exposure to a wide variety of patients. So looking back, it was a good thing because, you know, you really do get to learn so much. You're working with all these different patients, all these different impairments and functional impairments and diagnoses that, you know, you learn about in school, and you get a little bit of exposure to when you're a student doing internships. But now it's just you. You know, you can't lean back on a clinical instructor, or you can't lean back on the fact like, hey, I'm going to be gone in 3 weeks and be back to school if I just gut it out. No, it's you. You have to get this person better or help them along their journey to get better. So I think if you're put in a high-pressure situation like a private practice or even just generally an outpatient setting, there's some negatives to that. Like I said, high-pressure private practice, you know, that's a negative. That's a big-time thing that gets tough. And not all private practices are like that. But yeah, they're certainly out there, and if you're not careful, you could fall into that, and so many negative things can come from that, not just, you know, on a social realm or professional realm, but, you know, a whole number of negative things can come from that. But going back to what I was saying about acute care setting or inpatient rehab, you know, really what I was going to say is that you should keep in mind that our purpose in this particular instance as physical therapists is to help restore as much function as possible within our patients. In order to do that, you have to treat the whole person, not just a body part, not even just a region. You have to treat the whole person. So I think that's something that can get lost when a young clinician is really trying to learn new things, whether it's by themselves or in a residency or fellowship program. You know, hopefully a lot of those programs would be good at keeping that big picture in mind. But if you're not going that route right away, I think it's very valuable to keep up with that and to make sure that, yeah, I have to look at this person as a whole and treat them as a whole person. And I don't just mean in a musculoskeletal sense. The best clinicians I know, again, the masters that I'm talking about, they're amazing at reading people and providing them exactly what they need. So that could be that you're a person, you're a shoulder for them to lean on, you're a sounding board for them to vent to, you're helping them find another provider to help them because, you know, you don't have the skills, or they just need a whole nother professional in general, like a surgeon, or to help them out on their journey, or you're basically there and calling them out on their BS. Whatever they need as an individual patient to help them get to where they want to get, you got to be that person. And sometimes that means, you know, having you're having the utmost caring and compassion for them. But sometimes that means you got to give them tough love, and you've really got to be that one person who's going to speak the truth to them. And yeah, they may not like you right away, but they'll respect you for it later on. So that's a couple of things. And what I was trying to get at before about saying acute care setting and inpatient rehab is, you know, you're kind of forced to help somebody obtain a certain level of function no matter what their diagnosis is, no matter what they're there for. And some of that is, you need to be familiar with certain medical pathologies and how people present at different stages of their recovery from a certain pathology. But instead of worrying about learning all these fancy techniques, you just need to learn how to get somebody to function better. You know, and some of that is just basics stuff that we learn within our entry-level program. But to me, I think that is very valuable that you can take that and translate that back into anything else that you learn beyond that. So that's why I say, you know, for a new grad, I think it would be valuable to spend time a year or two in acute setting or inpatient rehab setting, because that you can carry with you the rest of your career, no matter what you get into. You know, if you're going out and you're starting in private practice or outpatient setting, you know, outpatient orthopedics, things like that, because that's what you want to do, you know, hey, that's great. But, you know, for some reason, if things change and you have to go into inpatient rehab or acute care settings, you know, a lot of what you may have learned in school or on any of those internships that you did in those settings, it ain't going to come back really fast, at least from myself and other people that I've spoken to about it. You know, it's so far removed from what you do now that it's kind of hard to get back into that flow. But I think if the order is different, you know, you do those things first and then you translate that into private practice, I think it can only help you in the long run. So the next question is, what are the biggest mistakes people make as a physical therapist? What kind of question are these? when I think about all these things, it's like, man, you know, you'd really have to speculate on a question like this quite a bit. A lot of the things that I'm speaking about are obviously my own opinions and are really reflections of what I think about my own journey as a clinician. But, you know, having said that, biggest mistakes... you know, this could be a whole podcast in itself, but I'd say some common things that could be better for younger clinicians that come to mind right off the bat are to be more efficient with your time in the clinic. There's many, many times that I know of for friends and colleagues that get so bogged down in their documentation that they either stay late or they come in early to finish that documentation, which is good because that's what a professional should do. So I'm not knocking that. But even myself, you know, I've done that quite a bit in the past. But after going through and learning, you know, and training myself to be better while in a fellowship, I've been so much more efficient ever since then. So what do I mean by that? You know, being efficient with your time documenting, you know, don't spend... And this is certainly different for different patient populations that you could work with. But when you're in front of a patient, don't be afraid. Don't think it's too unprofessional, especially now that we have computers. But don't think it's too unprofessional to, as you're bringing the patient back, that's your subjective. You know, while you're walking somebody back or you're wheeling somebody back or doing other things, as they're coming back to their treatment space, that is time to get your subjective. It's not necessarily time to chit-chat about random stuff. I mean, while you certainly do that, but you work your subjective into it. You find out how they're doing, how they've been since their past, the last time you saw them. And then, you know what? You're already getting that down, so by the time you get back to the treatment area, you are already ready to type that into the subjective portion of your note. You know, you don't have to wait till you get into the computer and go, okay, so how have you been? You know, you're finding that out on the way back. So that's time that you don't waste. And then, as, you know, after you do that, you get the person back, you say, okay, go ahead and get your shoes and socks off or get on the table or do this or do that. And while they're doing that, as long as they're safe, you turn and you do your subjective. You type it in real fast. You know, it shouldn't take long. And then whenever you are... doing any interventions, you know, even if you're doing a session that's nothing but manual therapy, at some point you got to give the patient a break, or at some point you got to take a break. So anytime you're doing that, you're giving them a break or you're taking a break, let them know, hey, you know, I really don't want to forget this. I want to write this in real quick because I think it's really important. So you turn and you type in, you know, a sentence of the intervention you just did. So you do that here and there along the length of the treatment session so that by the end, you basically got your objective done. And obviously we're doing a soap note here. So that by the end of that, you've got this objective done. You got the objective portion done. Now, don't wait till the very end of your treatment time to do a note or to say goodbye to a patient. So if you have the luxury of having an hour, and I'm gonna go off on another little tangent here. If you have an hour treatment session, you got such a luxury that, for goodness sakes, you got plenty of time to do a note within that hour. If you got 45 minutes, if you got 30 minutes, you still have time to get a note pretty much done in that time frame. So, for example, you got 45 minutes. That's what we have where I work right now. You can still treat 40 minutes and legally and ethically bill 3 units for that time. So guess what? That leaves 5 minutes to type in a quick assessment of what you did with the patient and their response for the day, and then what your plan is for the next treatment. So by the end of that time, you should be done. You don't need to waste time later on in your day because you took up the entire time period with your patient. Now, that doesn't mean that stuff doesn't happen from time to time, and yeah, I didn't get to do it. You know, that still happens to me. I didn't get to my note because, what hit the fan, or I had to go help out another person, or it just wasn't one of those days where I could get all those things done. But by and large, that should be accomplished every time you're done with the patient so that you don't have to go back and finish those things at the end of your day. So that's one thing, what I mean by being efficient with your time. I can't emphasize that enough. You know, so many people that I've talked to, students that I've mentored and otherwise, it's an acquired skill, definitely, but are you going to sacrifice your time and your family's time for your patient, or are you going to give them what they need and still keep your life, you know, still keep your sanity? I think there's a balance there. So moving on, other mistakes I think people make as a clinician, I think there are plenty of people out there who have a lot to offer others, and they don't do it. They don't offer it. So what do I mean by that? I think we should mentor others. That could be a high school student, college student, wanting to learn more about our profession. Or it could be a grad student doing their internship at, your location. Whatever it is, pass on the gifts that you've been given. For most of us, we got into our field because of a handful of inspirational people. That could be patient, clinician, professor, teacher, whatever. But, if they hadn't mentored you or others, would you even be here now? Would you be in your profession? Would you be listening to me drone on about these things? Probably not. Plus, when you have to mentor another person in any capacity, it really forces you to learn what in the world you're doing or why you're doing the things you're doing in the clinic even better. Unless you don't mind looking silly in front of somebody. But really, it really forces you to go through these things and learn more at a different depth in order to teach it. So I think that's pretty valuable. Another thing I think mistakes people make is something that I think it should not be common at all, but it is burnout. There's many of my friends and mentors that have talked about teaching others in continuing education. And later, a person that took a class comes back and tells them that they were on the verge of leaving their profession because they were burned out. I thankfully have not experienced that, and I hope I never do. But how do you avoid burnout? It's a great, it's a great question, and I don't have an answer for it in particular, but I have a few thoughts. One is to always remember, keep perspective on what we do for our career. And some of you are listening to this, you're like, yeah, I've heard that before. Some of my thoughts are obviously influenced by my mentors. Kent Kaiser, Tim Kronk, Greg Johnson, all these other people that have influenced me. But keep proper perspective of things. It's important to really be there for our patients, yes, and to do what we can to help them achieve their goals. But it should never, never consume us and be the only thing that we identify ourselves as. You know, I'm not just a physical therapist. I'm not just a manual therapist. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm a brother. A son. A friend, etc. And then I'm a manual physical therapist. When I leave work every day, I leave the work there. That doesn't mean I don't do other things related to, you know, my profession outside of work. You know, obviously this website and my own self-study are things that I would do outside of work. But I don't let things that occur at work occupy my time at home. And a lot of this, I'm still have a level of anxiety about at home, because I don't want to be that person who, you know, does work and misses out on things at home. I remember asking one of my main mentors, Greg Johnson, during fellowship times, and even afterward, you know, what would you do? How would you balance work and life? You know, all those kind of things, because especially if you own your own practice, it's like that. I can imagine that is never a part of your life. But you have to be very intentional about those things. I've been guilty of many things, you know, related to that. And I remember very early on when our oldest son was very, very young, my wife basically called me out a time or two. I was reading a book or an article or something, or doing documentation at home around her, our son, and even my in-laws, one evening after, or, you know, a couple of evenings after dinner. And she basically called me out, like, what are you doing? You know, come on, you need to be here. If you're going to be here, be here. So I really think that is something that's very important. Somehow, whatever your position in life is, whatever your situation in life is, you have to have a life outside of your profession, outside of your work, somehow. That can go off in many different directions. You can have a life outside of your profession and work any number of ways, but you have to have something to look forward to when you get out. Because if you don't, I think that is one of the big ways that burnout happens. Okay, so let's look at our next question. What is your daily/weekly routine? Okay, that's kind of a very broad question, but, you know, if I'm going to say at work, it's simply, you know, anybody else would do the same thing. You go to work and treat patients. If I have an opening in my schedule, you know, I may spend that time reading up on some things I'm interested in learning or trying to learn more about, or you can grab a colleague, work colleague, to practice techniques with. You know, we could all probably do a little bit better if we work with a lot of other people that we can ask them, do they need help? All number of things that could go into that kind of daily, weekly routine. But, you know, other than that, I really don't have any major routine that I think that I go through. On a daily or weekly basis, outside of work, it's, you know, everything is so busy and hectic with home life that it's somewhat hard to have a routine in terms of physical therapy or manual therapy related stuff. Next question is, which resources or books do you recommend for personal or professional development? And that's a good question, because I actually love books and have quite a bit of them in my house, much to my wife's chagrin, actually. But if I'm going to, you know, take a stab at that, there's obviously so many different resources that could be listed here. At the moment, I've really slowed down on doing things like continuing education a little bit, because I've spent pretty much the past 10 years taking many courses throughout each year. So having learned a lot of the different things during that time that I wanted to pursue and spending the time to get halfway decent with my manual therapy skills, I've kind of taken a somewhat of a step back from that, using other methods to continue to train and learn new things. And some of those are online classes that you could take, or just personal study all the books that I do have. One of the things I like to do now is kind of combining all the things that I've learned or experimenting with new things and just basically having fun in different ways in the clinic, having the freedom to experiment, try out different things that I haven't been taught, or how to modify what I have been taught, and seeing how that works for me and the individual patient in front of me. And honestly, it's been a ton of fun to have the ability to get creative for the individual in front of you and really, I don't say I create stuff because I don't want to feel that arrogant, and there's nothing new under the sun, really, but just work with things that I haven't really seen before. So, like I said, not that I'm creating new techniques or new things, it's just I'm sure somebody else in the world in the past has done it or is currently doing it. It's just I kind of try out different stuff that I haven't been shown before. Beyond that, there's many great organizations out there that teach continuing education. My advice would be to learn as much as you can about those different organizations before taking a course. That way you're not spending time and money just bouncing around from one to the next just to see what they're about. But do what you can ahead of time. Do your homework. And if during that homework process it sounds like what they are putting out there really resonates with you and your personal beliefs, then take a course from them. If you enjoy that and you want to learn more about what they do or what they teach, then certainly go through their curriculum. I'd really advise not to be a continuing education butterfly, so to speak. Where you take a course from one group or a couple of courses from one group and then another group and then another group and then another group, always kind of floating around and dabbing in a little bit with everything that people do. To me, if you do that, it will take a long time to really learn any particular paradigm or approach, way of assessing or treating a patient. So that's one kind of drawback from it. And, admittedly, there's going to be some people that would listen to me say that and kind of scoff at the idea about learning systems or paradigms or other approaches, things like that. But you know what? I believe that there is some value in those things. For many of us, when we were in our entry-level program, we were given a lot of the tools for assessment and treatment that we would need to be successful once we started practicing. But there's a lot of programs out there, some better than others, that don't do as good of a job tying everything together and really teaching the students in those entry-level programs how to see a bigger picture or just how everything is interrelated. And I don't just mean body parts, but how the examination process is interrelated through assessments and interventions and outcomes and things like that, and how coordinated everything has to be in order to be what I would consider a very efficient way of evaluating and treating a patient. So those are some of the reasons why I think learning a system or a paradigm, and I'm using air quotes, I think can be valuable. So hopefully anybody listening to this wouldn't scoff at that idea. But, if you do, consider it, thoughtfully consider it. It's not about, learning from gurus or anything like that necessarily, but it's a way of streamlining what you're doing in the clinic. That way, again, you're more effective and more efficient for the patient in front of you, and you can spend more time with them on the things that matter for that individual instead of having a ton of different things roaming through your head and you're trying to figure out which direction to go. In terms of personal development, like I said before, biggest thing is have a life outside of this profession. Make sure that you can have something to go home to so that you're not spending all your time focusing on work, I think, is the biggest thing for personal development. Spend time with your family and your friends, things that will enrich your life and cultivate those relationships for the better in the end, I think is the biggest thing I would say for personal development. Okay, last question. Do you have any other advice or knowledge from your experience you feel would be helpful to an aspiring physical therapist? Well, hopefully, I've been stating those things all along here. You know, all the different things that we've talked about so far, I believe would be helpful advice, you know, from my own experience for any new physical therapist or new manual therapist. To add to that, I think, you know, find what you're passionate about within your profession. You know, for physical therapy, that can be a huge, wide variety of things within the physical therapy world. You know, if it isn't orthopedics and manual therapy, no problem. You know, whatever you're passionate about, pursue excellence within that area of study, and I think both you and your patients will be better off for it. So that's the end of the questions that this individual had sent me, and the different things I wanted to kind of mention and talk about. Hopefully, this maiden voyage of me doing, you know, a podcast all by myself will be helpful, and some of the different thoughts that I had and talked about here will be beneficial for all of those that are listening. If you have any comments or any suggestions or stuff that you'd like to add, I would love to hear. I really would, because these are certain things that I think to me aren't spoken enough about, but everybody needs to know. I remember talking to my residency mentor, my fellowship mentors, even mentors outside of those programs, you know, once I'm, you know, just practicing regularly, just asking them stuff about all these things, the questions that were just asked to me. You know, well, how do you balance life, your family and work? You know, how did you do that? Or what were you thinking at this stage of your life, or so and so? And, you know, everybody has different points of view. So I feel like if we can use this as a forum, hint, hint, I think it would be very helpful for everybody in the end. So, hey, if you got a differing opinion from me, or if you have something else to add that you think would be valuable, I would love to hear it. And I think everybody else would love to hear it too. So either go down to the comment section of this particular page on the website and add to it, or if you want to add a comment on Facebook or Twitter, or even to iTunes, comments for this particular podcast, I would love to see it. So please do so. Please share with any of your friends or colleagues that you think would benefit from this as well. Having said all those things, you know, hopefully you guys continue to listen. I hope to get some other content out here, some, you know, more interviews, like I said before, and maybe some other things that, you know, I myself am going to go through. And if there's any particular thing that you want to hear about, whether it's my thoughts or other people's thoughts, then please send me an email. There's a contact page on the website that you can send a question through that, or, you know, you can obviously use the social media things. All the different ways that you can submit something or make a suggestion, I would love to hear it. Anyway, appreciate you guys listening. This lasted a little bit longer than I expected, but I appreciate you slogging your way through it. Until next time, have a great day. Enjoy what you're doing. Have fun in the clinic, and keep practicing.